They're ready to go when you are, Chair Clark.
All right. Well, good evening, everybody. I'd like to call the February 9th, 2021 study session of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board to order, starting tonight at 6 p.m. Mr. Liao, may I please have the roll call?
Yes. Vice Chair Joseph Coyle.
Here.
Board Member Antonia Landau.
Here.
Board Member Ronald O'Dell.
Here.
Board Member Philip Saleta.
He was here.
I see him.
I'm
here. There you go.
I had to unmute first.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Saleta. Board Member Gary Temple. Let's see if I can get him unmuted as well.
I'm here.
Thank you, Gary. Board Member Matthew Wood.
Present.
All right. Thank you, sir. And Chair Anna Clark.
Present.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Liao. May I have the next item, please?
Yes. Next on the agenda is call to audience.
Great. I will now open call to audience. Now, during the call to audience, you may address the board on any issue you wish. However, it will not be open for discussion pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law. Individual members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the board may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. In advance, email requests are preferred. However, at this time, anyone who is participating through video link may raise their hand, or for those participating via telephone, may dial *9. Mr. Liao, did we have any advance requests to speak?
No, ma'am. No requests in advance.
All right. And do we have anybody was wanting to speak?
Let's see. I do not see any hands raised at the moment. We can give it a second or two. There's not a whole lot of public currently in participation, so let's give it a second.
Looks like there's someone connecting. Give it another minute here. All right. Well, let's go ahead and close the call to audience and move on. Mr. Liao, if you please read the next item.
Yes. Next on the agenda is study session agenda item number 1, presentation and discussion regarding the Parks and Recreation Master Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Liao. Good evening, Park and Recreation Advisory Board. It's great to see you. Thank you for attending our study session. This is a continuation of projects throughout the master plan. Mike Spetz will lead the PowerPoint presentation, and then afterwards we'll leave it open for discussion. The as you'll see at the end, next steps are not as well defined as we have in the past. Unfortunately, we had to postpone a study session with council. Just logistically, it got super late and no one really had the mental bandwidth to start our agenda item at 10:45 in the evening. So we're working through that, and we'll certainly let you know what those next steps are, but we do plan to continue with bringing the full document for review and consideration to you all in March. And so with that, I would like to turn it over to Mike Spetz. Thank you.
Hi, folks. Thanks so much. I'm just going to kind of jump right into it. First of all, thank you so much for, I know this is a special session, so, and I know you have your regular meeting next week, so I do appreciate you taking the additional time out of your busy schedules to, engage in this. So I'm just going to share my screen and allow us to kind of plow through this. So let me kill my video just to save some bandwidth as we go through this. So tonight is going to be a little bit different than we have done before. We're going to focus the first part of this presentation really around operations, in particular around recreation program assessments, talk to you a little bit about cost of service and cost recovery goals. Then as we have kind of defined a little bit with regards to the capital improvement plan that we presented last time, we're going to explore a little bit more the partnership opportunities that we've identified with AmFi School District. And then we are going to circle back around to the capital improvement plan and the funding strategies, some of which you all had requested as part of the last presentation. Unfortunately, you're just going to hear from me tonight. I don't have the pleasure of having Clint and or Rebecca, so I will plow through this, and hopefully you will not be sick of me by the end of this. So just as a quick reminder, community needs core program areas for the community was this as it relates to recreation experiences. Again, just to reiterate, you have kind of a clear cut top five in terms of high priority, another six that kind of fall within the medium priority and low priority, as we have said numerous times, doesn't necessarily mean that we're not doing these programs. It just, as when you think about it from a community-wide perspective, these become either very age-specific, skill-specific, or special interest-specific. However, at the request of the mayor, we did take the program and service prioritization and break it down a little bit more by what we call household type. And so what you can see is all of the black dots or all the dots that are filled in are the ones that are high priority to each one of these different household types. So, you know, the column to the left obviously defines the programs and services. The second column is what was the high priority for the town as a whole. The middle column there is what's high priority for households with children ages 0 to 17. And then we have households ages 18 to 54, but do not have kids living at home. And then we have households ages 55 and up with no children. So you can see that there is some alignment, a lot of alignment with regards to programs and services from the townwide perspective and the households ages 55 and up. And this is to be expected simply because of your demographics and about 50% of your population making up that household type. But there is some other alignment with regards to households with children, the community special events and fitness and wellness programs, and of course, some households with ages 18 to 54. When we look at the medium category, so you can see that there's a clear cut top six for the town as a whole. And there's a lot of, again, alignment for with the town as a whole for those households that primarily don't have children. But when you look at the prioritization of the medium priority programs and services for households with children's ages 0 to 17, you can see how much longer.
I am stupid. Oh my gosh, I hope I'm muted.
I'm sorry, can you hear me? Okay.
Mike, we're still good.
Okay. You can see how much longer that list is for households with children ages 0 to 17. So this is where you start to move a lot of the programs and services that were in the low priority for the town as a whole, but you move them up to that medium priority category. It's really interesting. And what this allows the department to do going forward is to really do some target marketing with regards to programs and services based on household type, as opposed to just assuming that this is what you're going to do. This allows you to better understand how people in different life modes have different needs when it comes to recreation experiences. It also allows us to look at your demographics and to better define what, how much resources need to be allocated to meeting each of these different household types. As I said before, you can see that list is very different for households with kids versus households that don't have children. And so this is exceptionally useful information as we move forward with regards to making recommendations associated with programs and services. So one of the things, since your community as a whole, when we look at special events, did not matter household type. It was the highest priority. And so we wanted to just kind of circle back and remind you that there was a question on the survey that was very specific to special events. Again, and you know, once we kind of get out of COVID times, hopefully that's coming sooner rather than later. But this kind of gives you an understanding of the type of special events that folks are looking for. The one thing that's most interesting is cultural celebrations and festivals came out at 60%. And then entertainment and food and beverage were 58 and 47. So you may be thinking to yourself, at a lot of special events, there is some entertainment and there's almost always food and beverage. And so that is definitely the case. But when you think about special events that are centered around entertainment and special events that are centered around, shall we say, food festivals, that's where we start to differentiate the difference between entertainment and food and beverage being a part of a special event versus them being the centerpiece of that special event. So this really helps to really understand where the community's at in providing special events in the future. We wanted to kind of define a little bit better the core programs. And I think you probably have a pretty good grasp on this, but these are the core programs offered by the recreation division of the department. So aquatics, obviously, camps, and this is for summer and primarily summer and school breaks, community events, community special events, culture and enrichment programs. These typically have an educational component. Of course, golf, recreation and fitness. This could be the things like pickleball, tennis, and all of the fitness activities that go on within the community center. And then, of course, rental of spaces. So this is what you currently offer to your community, which in many cases fits all of those kind of individual choices very much fit underneath many of these categories. The one thing that you see missing from this list is to recognize that athletics or sports is not a part of this. These are core programs and services provided directly by the department. These are not all of everything that goes on in the community. And so where the department plays a role in ensuring that athletics has a place in the town is through the facilitation and reservation of athletic fields. Those athletic programs are certainly being offered by other organizations within your community and as part of, you know, either individual nonprofit organizations or as part of a larger nonprofit organization. So I just wanted to make that distinction that if you asked why athletics or sports is
Mike, I believe we lost you there.
Okay, hold on 1 second. How about now?
Yep, we can hear you again. Maybe rewind it.
Okay.
15, 30 seconds.
Okay. The point that I was trying to make was about athletics and sports, and simply the fact that you all are not direct providers of that.
However, you... pause. I'm sorry. Are you aware the recording stopped?
Oh, I did not catch that. Thank you, Chair Clark. Let's get that recording again.
Okay.
All right. You're back on, Mike.
Great. Thank you. So athletics is not a part of your portfolio. You are a facilitator of that, of those programs and services with other nonprofits through the rentals of space category, in particular, whether it's tennis or pickleball or diamond or multipurpose field sports. So another thing we wanted to look at was how you're doing in terms of serving the different age segments. And so what we've identified here is a best practice organization is really looking to provide programs and services at the level of four and above for each age segment. So you can see as we've looked at the core program areas that you provide and defined whether or not each of these age segments is a primary market. In other words, you're targeting them primarily for these programs and services, or they're a secondary market. You can see that you're doing great with the exception of preschool. Ages 5 and under, you only have two categories in which those are the that is the primary service market, camps and community events, and then teens, where you have aquatics, community events, and rentals of space, in which you're directly providing services for. So what this does is it gives us an opportunity to go back and take a look at where the priority programs are in the community as it relates to families with kids, and allows us to start to develop programs that do a better job of providing programs and services for preschoolers as well as teens, so that you have a balance across all age segments, you know, being provided as part of your recreation program. Next thing we wanted to look at was life cycles. And so we've talked a lot about life cycle when it comes to park amenities. However, programs have life cycles as well. And just to give you an example, 10 years ago, there was not a lot of conversation about pickleball and yoga, for example. However, they have become much more mainstream, you know, programs and services, but other programs and services have started to decline. Such things as Zumba has in many cases started to decline. And up until the pandemic, golf had even started to decline as well. So the idea is to understand that your programs, just like your park amenities and facilities, always go through life cycles. Some, such as learn to swim programs, are always going to be a staple of what you do, provided you have a pool, because you always are going to want to teach kids to swim. But there are always going to be programs that age that just life cycle out. People no longer have an interest in it. And the idea here is to really start to, you know, I guess, impart upon the department that even though you have a lot of programs and services that are kind of in their infancy, at some point in time, just because they were popular and successful in 2020 or 2021, doesn't necessarily they're going to mean that they're going to be popular, highly participated in, and successful in 2025 and 2026. We want to obviously Ensure that you have your eye on your programs and services so that you're not spending resources administrating and putting together programs that people don't have an interest for. You have to be willing to let go of them. Too often, recreation programmers, because they started something, want to continue to give these programs and services first aid and CPR just simply because they owned it and they started it and they have a vested interest in it being successful. We have to be willing to let it go. And by letting it go, what it does is it allows you an opportunity to free up resources to better meet emerging programs and services such as pickleball and yoga, as I referenced before. But as I said, you know, you are kind of in your infancy with regards to a lot of your programs and services simply because of, you know, the purchase of the community center, the golf course, the tennis courts, the pickleball courts. It's given you a lot more space around which to do programming. Even the aquatic center is not that old in terms of facilities. And so what you see here is basically that all of your programs are doing great in terms of their life cycle. You have about 50% of your programs in the introduction, takeoff, and growth stages, and another 50% of your programs that are in the mature stage. You do not, at this point, have any programs that you need to life cycle out. However, as I said before, you have to recognize that half of your programs right now are in the mature stage, and you have to keep an eye on participation levels very keenly and trends to understand how they start to slip into that saturated and decline phase. And you have to be willing to cut the cord. So this was your combined. This is what it looks like for your programs that are contracted. Nothing in the decline stage. And then this is what it looks like for your programs that you directly provide. Contracted programs, are simply, if I go back very quickly, such things as some of the camps. Golf is obviously contracted. Some of your recreation and fitness is contracted, and rental of space is contracted out. Such things as tennis or pickleball courts kind of fall into that rental of space. So we're not necessarily at this point concerned that we need to upend your programs. It's just a good revelation to recognize that at some point you're going to start to enter in some of these programs and services will enter into the saturation and decline phase. So we also wanted to take a look at classification of services and programs. And this really ties to, in many cases, this is going to really tie to your cost recovery goals. So we look to classify your programs using a three-tier pyramid. Right now, what we look at is we base the classification system on level of benefit. So we have essential services, and these are services that are you provide that have a broad public benefit, such things as special events, kind of come one, come all events, farmers markets, and so on and so forth. These are typically the programs and services that you can expect or should be okay with spending some general fund tax supported dollars on. As you move up the pyramid, we have important category, and this could be something where there's an individual benefit associated with it, but the community benefits as a whole as well. One of the things that we kind of sometimes fall into this category is swim lessons, where the kid or the adult is taking the swim lesson. They're benefiting because they're learning to swim, which is a lifelong skill, but the community benefits as whole, because the last thing you want to encounter, one of the last things that you want to encounter in a town, is trauma around life-saving incidents or drownings. And then we move up the pyramid to what we call value-added programs and services. These are the programs in which, or services, in which only or primarily only the individual is benefiting from them. So an individual fitness class, the rental of space, and so on and so forth. These are the ones that we typically have the highest level of cost recovery associated with them and the least amount of general fund tax supported dollars. So we did a quick analysis of your overall classification of services. About two thirds of your 110 grand total fall into the value added category. And then just somewhere between 15 and 20% kind of make up the essential category, which is heavily tax supported and important, which is, you know, kind of user fee / tax supported. When we looked at the programs that were contracted, the value added increased from 66% up to 72%. There's only 18 of those, but they do make up a significant amount of your participation. However, those 18 are primarily value added. And then, of course, 11% essential, 17% important. And then the programs and services that you provide directly, this chart very much mirrors what you see overall. Again, so right now, your current approach to cost recovery is that you're seeking to recover quite a bit, if not all of your costs, for at least two thirds of your programs going forward. So how does this translate then into, I'll first cover pricing strategies and then get into cost recovery. But you have, and this is a great chart to look. I don't think a lot of people recognize all of the potential different pricing strategies that can go into determining how you price programs and services beyond just cost recovery goal. And so you may price things based on age segment, family, household status, residency. Weekday, weekend means that you have different pricing for different days of the week. You may also then have different pricing for different times of the day, prime time versus non-prime time. You currently don't offer any group discounts. You may have different pricing, and you do have different pricing based on different locations. Competition, determining such things as camps and golf, certainly helps to influence your price based on what others are doing the services for. Cost recovery goals. The interesting piece is that you've identified only two of your programs and services that are driven, your part of your pricing strategy is driven by cost recovery goals. The outcome of this exercise is that cost recovery goals will influence every program that you offer in some way, shape, or form. And then, of course, customers' ability to pay. Do you offer financial assistance or scholarships for folks that just can't afford your programs and services? So you do a pretty good job of across the board. We're going to help to try and define this a little bit better based on really what should you do for each one of your core program areas. And in particular, how do all of these pricing strategies help you to achieve a cost recovery goal? When we look at cost recovery, now I'm going to couch this by saying that this is just based on direct costs. So this is direct labor and direct supplies and material associated with running programs and services. This does not get into what we would call full-time employee evaluation or allocation to programs and services, such things as indirect costs, such as the maintenance that is necessary for each one of your spaces, and then any admin and overhead, such as department administration, is not applied to these. And I'll address that as we go forward, but I just wanted to make sure you understood the context around the cost that you're going to see. So we've gone through a what we would call kind of a cost of service exercise. And you can see that currently, when we look at aquatics, your overall aquatic budget is much closer to $1 million. The revenue that you take in is about $500,000. However, your direct program expenditures, which I just mentioned, is a little bit closer to what we'll say about $600,000. So you're currently at a point of recovering 84%, almost 85% of your direct program expenditures. What we've done then is looked at how we should classify every one of these programs and services based on level of benefit, and then what the cost recovery target should be. You can see that you're achieving, in many cases, well above 100% cost recovery for every one of these because you're only applying direct program expenditures. The only one that you're actually achieving a little bit less than what we're stating as a cost recovery goal is the Oro Valley Aquatic Center membership. You're currently recovering about 33%, and our recommendation is 50. And so if we were to look at how we price that program or that service, you may have an opportunity to capture an additional $100,000 or approximately $100,000 to offset those expenditures. We've done this for all of the core programs. So rec center memberships. So what we've done here is identified all of the direct program expenditures associated with the rec center membership. So everything that in tan is more or less a program or a service that is included as part of your membership fee. And so we have not kind of separated those out to give you an understanding of all of those individual costs that are basically you're trying to capture or recapture associated by membership fees or daily guest fees. You can see that currently just based again on direct program expenditures that you have almost 151% total cost recovery. And you can see that all the way at the bottom. At this point, just based on direct program expenditures, we're not necessarily recommending a potential net revenue increase. When we look at individual rec center programs that are not a part of the membership, again, you can see that you have a lot of alignment with regards to your programs and services. So we do have the membership total there at the top, but then everything in white is not a part of that membership subtotal. Everything in white there is a standalone program that has a direct cost or user fee associated with it and direct program expenditures. The only one that's kind of what I would say losing money, and I don't necessarily think it's losing money, is Spooktacular. That is a free event, and your direct program expenditure loss is about $3,000. We're recommending that you look at a target cost recovery of 25%, and this is not necessarily about charging now for to participate in Spooktacular, but maybe being able to bring in sponsorships to help generate maybe $750 to $1,000. When we look at rec and culture programs, again, these are a wide variety of programs that you offer either in your facilities or primarily actually in your parks or at Steampunk Ranch. And you can see right now that, again, based on direct program expenditures, all of these programs are achieving for the most part, kind of within what we would call the recommended targeted cost recovery range. You can see, you know, there's probably in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 of these individual programs. But based on having a specific target cost recovery, again, much of this is around the community benefit essential programs that possibly through sponsorships and donations, you would have an opportunity to generate an additional $12,000. Again, you know, it's not what I would call big money in the big scheme of things, but every little bit helps. I think one of the big takeaways here is that as we look to continue to move forward in advancing special events and tying that to cost recovery of about 25%, what we're going to look to try to do is to figure out, instead of charging the community to participate in these individual in these programs or services or special events, we're going to try to make them much more what we would call community special events. You know, provided we are okay with getting direction from town council to have what we would call kind of a sponsorship program for these. It's important to recognize that as you continue to advance special events, that you want to approach each and every one of your potential sponsors once annually. You don't want to continue to go back to them and try to hit them up for each and in every individual event. Being able to create some sort of package deal around sponsorships is the best way to go. Otherwise, they kind of, the community, the private sector has a tendency to feel like they're getting nickel and dimed and having to spend, and you're just quote unquote going back to that well too many times. So your overall cost recovery right now based on direct program expenditures is about 115%. The target cost recovery is about 149% or 150%. Your increase in net revenue is looking at about 112,000. And if you recall, about 100,000 of that was tied to the Aquatic Center memberships. So in pausing here, I think the one thing to recognize is that this is not what we would call, and we weren't scoped to, but this is not a total cost of service approach, because we have not incorporated the allocation of all full-time employees, you know, on the recreation side. We have not applied department administration to these costs, and we have not applied maintenance directly that is necessary to directly support the programs and services that you provide that generate revenue. You can't provide programs and services without all of that other, whether it be administration or maintenance. So one of the key recommendations going forward is going to be that you conduct a full cost of service to really get a better understanding of what your cost recovery is for each and every one of these programs. And then to come back and recalibrate and readjust your targeted cost recovery. That said, using the methodology, you know, that we explained as part of the classification of services should be your approach, should be a major driver in terms of how you set a pricing policy. So it's going to be really about essential services should recover 0 to 25%. Important services should be in that 25 to 75%, and value added services should be in that 75 and up percent in terms of cost recovery. Then what we, you know, you want to do then is to evaluate your opportunities with these pricing strategies to help you achieve your cost recovery goal. So that cost recovery is not your only quote unquote pricing strategy. So let me stop there and see if you have any questions before we move into partnerships.
Let's see. Looks like Vice Chair Coyle has a question or comment.
Sure. Mike, good presentation. I appreciate it. Maybe your fourth chart in where you had the prioritization by the four groups, the percentages of households. Do you have the information that further, thank you.
It's going slow.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
For those four categories, do you have a breakdown of the percentage of households in Oro Valley that fall into those three categories?
Yeah, I do. I don't necessarily have, I apologize, I don't have that in front of me. I can tell you that about 50% of your community does fall into the 55 and older category. And I think children, I want to say is less than, children under the ages of 17 are less than 20%. However, that 20% does not count for their parents. So that number is probably a little bit closer to 30 to 33%. And then the remainder would probably be that young adult to middle age that don't have children, given the fact that you're a pretty family-centric / senior community. I wouldn't necessarily call you a haven for young adults without kids. Or adults without kids.
Great, Mike. Thanks for not calling me old, too.
Sure.
Chair Clark, I had a couple more questions, but please cut me off if other people are waiting. Where you had the direct program expenditures, that just covers kind of what I'd call the direct time and material associated with the various programs. It does not include what I tend to call a fully loaded G&A of your overhead.
Correct. I think it also kind of includes what we would call part-time staff associated with that. But I don't believe there's a lot of full-time staff associated with those numbers, correct?
Oh, really? Okay. So I'm looking at the chart right now, say for the Aqua class. Okay, it's $5,900. So that would be the cost of certain like equipment and the paying a part-time person to conduct the class, but it wouldn't include any of the overall administration or cost associated with the maintenance and the general running of the aquatic center.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I agree. That would be a good way to look at things because that ends up getting to your, what I like to call your fully loaded labor rate of what it really costs to put something out the door.
Exactly. And that certainly is going to be the recommendation going forward. But I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily change the work on the classification side and the cost recovery side. But
no,
it then changes potential opportunities for revenue generation. But again, when you start to look at a lot of these programs, you're recovering well above 100% already. So even if you start to fully load those program or fully load those costs, there's going to be a pretty strong likelihood that you're still falling kind of within a range of, you know, that 75% and up. So, but again, we don't know that until you really start to crunch the numbers.
No, and I think what you provided in terms of the target cost recoveries of like, you know, the 25 and above or 75.
Right.
I think that's a really good concept to get around and try and get even, you know, mayor and council around that concept that, hey, as we march forward, here's our targets. Because that makes it easier to pitch ideas in the future that says this is a 75% or this is like a 25%.
Correct. And it helps you set up your budget and start to have the conversation around You know, that one thing that Parks and Recreation is very different is than a lot of town government or town departments is simply a matter of that you do have the opportunity to generate revenue to offset expenditure. So you can start to have a conversation around what we call net subsidy as opposed to, you know, the full appropriation of the budget.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Do you have any other questions from the board? All right, let's go ahead and continue.
All right, we'll move on to partnerships. So we've had quite a few conversations with Amphi Park, you know, Amphi School District around partnerships. One thing that we did is we did a quick evaluation of, you know, kind of some of the best practice things that you can do to oversee your partnerships. And so these were just kind of four questions we asked. Do you maintain a database of all of your organizational partners? The answer is yes. Do you have an overall formal adopted partnership policy? The answer was no. Do you have a written agreement with every partnership? The answer was no. And do you have identifiable, measurable outcomes? And what this means is really trying to ensure that your partnership is win-win, so that, you know, both parties or multiple parties have equal skin in the game. And the answer was no. And so obviously this allows us an opportunity to provide you some recommendations and what I would call not just statements that say you should do this or do that, but provide you information that will give you a good starting point to help answer to be able to check or put an X in the yes column for all four of these. So when we look at Amphi, we're looking at three different partnership opportunities right now. This one is kind of one that is continuing, and it's really just a joint use of school buildings and aquatic facilities. Right now, there is currently kind of an agreement with the town and Amphi for the aquatic center. But again, this is really about shared use of taxpayer-supported space. And so the schools are funded by tax dollars. Parks and Recreation is funded by tax dollars. Whether you look at that capitally or whether you look at that operationally, at the end of the day, it's tax dollars. And so this is about trying to maximize the utilization of facilities, whether it be within school buildings or whether it be within parks and rec facilities. These are just kind of some of the bullet points that we would have to work through regarding the school district, regarding their requirements for joint use. One, obviously, is that school functions take priority. That has been and will always be the case. Number two is simply that if there is an opportunity to have a direct benefit provided by Amphi's students, that fees potentially have an opportunity to be reduced or waived to use school buildings. And third is obviously to have an IGA or an intergovernmental agreement that the town would have to enter into with Amphi so that they could get a reduced rate based on rental of space. And so these are just kind of the overarching. This is not what I would kind of consider to be a new full-blown partnership opportunity. We just want to seek out opportunities within school facilities where they have spaces available that allow you an opportunity to do programs and services that meet the needs of the community if you don't have space within your own parks and facilities to do so. And so this is, you know, just an efficient and effective way. Most every park and recreation agency across the country has some sort of agreement with their school system to do this exact same thing. The second one, opportunity, is the agreement or the capital improvement that we had identified in the CIP. And this is really an interlocal agreement for the improvement of the athletic fields at the Coronado K-8 school. The property ownership, what makes this one interesting and why it's not just an IGA, but it's more an LILA, is that the property is owned by Pima County. And that currently AmFi Public Schools lease that property from Pima County. That agreement is set to expire in 2023, which is actually very fortuitous timing because it allows the town an opportunity to start to have conversations about, given the fact that this lease is going to expire within a couple of years, what a new agreement like might look like. Right now, Pima County's role with the AmFi school district is that the AmFi has to make these fields available for public use when not utilized by the school district, and that the county currently maintains the athletic field lighting and assumes the utility costs associated with it. So it's a pretty straightforward agreement. AmFi is responsible right now for the maintenance of those fields. The going forward, what we kind of look at is an opportunity for the town to share in the investment, reinvestment, and expansion, in particular restroom facilities of the athletic field, so that they're basically, the benefit is that Oro Valley Little League, who primarily uses those fields now, would have a much better athletic field system, which translates into a higher quality experience for their Little League. AmFi's public school, and again, this is all very high level and subject to negotiations, but how do they share in the investment, reinvestment, and expansion, given the fact that these are on kind of on school grounds and have a direct benefit to the school district use as well, in particular for their athletic programs that they may offer. So this is kind of opportunity number two. We've kind of identified a placeholder in the capital improvement program of about $1.5 million in terms of the town's role. But again, that is yet to be determined or put in stone. But we wanted to ensure that we had some costs associated with this. We don't necessarily know what this might mean in terms of who's going to be responsible for the maintenance. It could be that the town, in part, AmFi is going to maintain it at level A, but the town and the Oro Valley Little League want it to be maintained at a higher level. So the town may look at an opportunity to pay that difference between whatever A is and that next maintenance level is, let's just call it B for simplicity's sake. So it wouldn't necessarily mean that the town would take on the entire costs associated with maintenance, but for a higher level of maintenance, the town may need to supplement those costs. The third opportunity is one that we kind of look at as being something more out into the future. But there is approximately 14 acres of property to the west of Ironwood Ridge High School that is owned by AmFi Public Schools. They currently have no plans for that property, and might be an opportunity as the town grows in that direction. Granted, this is kind of on the very edge of the community, so to speak, that it may have an opportunity for it to become a public park. So we're not really sure what that looks like, but it could be that, a park is planned for there. We don't necessarily know what it could be at this juncture, but it is an opportunity to share in the investment and potential management and maintenance of park and public park and rec facilities. And that would, one of the big benefits could be that a public park north of Tangerine which I know we've heard a lot of as part of this master plan conversation. And we showed you with regards to the equity mapping. AmFi Public Schools obviously would have an opportunity to be a part of that park planning process so that whatever ended up going there, that they would have an opportunity to have a direct benefit of use of those, you know, park and rec facilities as well. So these are kind of the three that we've explored. One, I think, is pretty simple, the joint use agreement. The second one, I think, is a lot more doable in the short term, is more doable than this third one in the short term. But this third one is a little, looking a little bit long term in terms of opportunities and available land. Any questions on the partnerships? They're pretty straightforward.
Just to point out in this slide that we're looking at, Naranja is actually not north of Tangerine Road.
So it is. That's right.
Just for information there. But, you know, I am really excited about this particular partnership because it kind of brings with the Parks and Recreation Department kind of instant parks with not a lot of money that we have to invest. I would really like to see this at the top of our list, particularly for Oro Valley Little Leaguers up there in Coronado. They need bathrooms, not porta potties. So something, you know, like I said, I'm very excited about. So thanks. Looks like Joe has a question. Go ahead, Joe.
Thanks, Chair. I'd also echo what Chair Clark just said. I particularly like that number two about the AmFi partnership opportunity. I think that's an outstanding idea. A question I have, and this is kind of just brainstorming here, but Mike, have you ever seen a Parks and Rec organization start its own separate 501c charitable organization / foundation? That does exist, and I've been involved with those over the years, and it's particularly in Southern Arizona, it's not out of the way. I mean, I was on the Pima Community Council board, and they had a separate foundation that actually raised money for them. Have you ever seen a Parks and Rec organization do that?
Yeah, I have been a part of two communities, one that actually had a community foundation around which Parks and Recreation was a direct recipient of that, and the community foundation as a whole took in dollars and earmarked them specifically for park and rec projects. But I've also been a part of another organization as a director that a 501c3 was developed to help with the redevelopment of one specific park in particular. And they actually generated about $750,000 to help reinvest in this one park. And that ended up spinning off into exactly what you're talking about, which is what we typically refer to as a Parks and Recreation Foundation. So they're typically a fundraising arm, nonprofit, that is separate from town government, town finances, has its own board, articles of incorporation, and so on.
Yeah. Might be, Chair Clark, might be an interesting thing to talk about at another time, because The reason it is kept separate from government for various reasons, but it does allow to follow upon what Mike was talking about of going out and actually pitching to, you know, businesses in the community. Hey, would you like to be a on the board of governors of the Parks and Rec Foundation? And by the way, it's a $2,000 a year fee to be on the board.
I like the idea. So definitely something to look into.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Chair.
Sure. The other benefit, just very quickly, on the Parks and Rec Foundation is that because it's a nonprofit, it does open you up to some potential grants that aren't available to governmental agencies.
Yes. Gotten that.
All right. I think we can keep moving along. Thank you.
Okay, sure. All right. So the last part, and this is the funding piece that we talked about a little bit last time when we presented the capital improvement plan. So what we have done This was just a reminder. This was the summary by tier. Sustainable projects is just lifecycle replacement. Expanded services are adding experiences to existing parks. And visionary projects are kind of those bigger dollar, bigger picture ones. And this was the priority project list that you all kind of, hate to say it this way, but you all kind of liked the last time. And so it takes that $62 million and kind of boils it down to about $40 million. So what we've done right now is we've identified all of the potential funding strategies that could fund each one of the capital improvements. And so this is the sustainable project. So what you can see, the far left column is the project. And then the columns across the top in the lighter blue are the different funding strategies. What we've done is worked with town staff to really kind of identify how each of these funding strategies could be applicable to funding each of these individual projects. So all of the black dots kind of indicate that bonds, for example, could be used to fund the community center site improvements and some of the improvements at James D. Cray, Riverfront, Steam Pump, and the Aquatic Center. And so we haven't gone so far as to do a 10-year financial analysis of each one of these funding strategies because we don't want to necessarily hamstring town council into thinking that you've got to use these funding strategies and we've got to get $2 million, for example, out of bonds to fund the sustainable portions of the project at James Cray. The idea is to really understand how these projects could be funded using some of these different sources. So then we've done the same thing for the expanded services. Funding strategies are a little bit less available, but there are still potentially five funding strategies that could be applied to these five projects. And then we've done the visionary projects, and I've broken this up into three different categories, just the park system projects. Again, the list of potential funding strategies becomes a little bit longer. You can see, again, pretty good diversity with regards to tapping different funding options for these projects. Trails, you can see a lot of that is in the other category, and that is primarily the county's RTA program, funding program, where a lot of the potential trail projects could get funded out of. Again, you can see some of the opportunities with Pima County and potentially general fund CIP for that pedestrian bridge. And then of course the visionary projects, this would likely kind of come out of the department's operating budget, annual operating budget, depending upon what year you chose to do these. So again, the idea is to recognize that there's not one potential funding strategy that is magical to trying to accomplish and implement every one of these projects. But this is where implementation really comes into play and really working with town council, town management, finance, even other departments, Pima County, grant opportunities to really understand how much of, for example, and again, please do not quote me on this, but let's just look at Big Wash Trailhead. Do grants potentially make up 50% of that? Does the general fund CIP make up another 30%? And does the park impact fee make up 20%? That would be the next step that would be on the implementation side of the master plan. When we looked at another request that you all had looked at, though, was what is the operational impact of your of the recommended priority projects? So This is just operations. This is not the capital improvements that we walk through. So what you see here is what we would call more the fully loaded, operational revenue and expenditures associated with each of your existing projects or your existing locations, such as Naranja, the community center, the aquatic center, and steam pump ranch. Your first column there is what your expenditures are. They total up to about $2.3 million. The second column is the annual revenue that's generated, and that's $1.4 million. So your current general fund subsidy for the existing parks, Naranja, the community center, the aquatic center, and steam pump ranch, is about $816,000. So what that means is taxpayer dollars are funding $816,000 of the operations of those four locations. The reason that you see zeros in the other ones is because those don't exist right now. All the ones in the middle there are the trail projects, and the one at the bottom is AmFi. So the next step then is to say, what's the future look like? And so after we've gone in and said, all right, let's just assume that you're going to construct all of these, right? And then, of course, there's an operations and maintenance cost to them. So we've kind of taken a stab at looking at each one of these. And based on a lot of work that we do across the country, in particular around operations and maintenance, we've identified these costs. So the budget goes from $2.3 million to about $3.4 million. But you also will have an opportunity to generate $2 million in revenue. Trails do not generate revenue, and we're not necessarily thinking that the AmFi School District partnership at Coronado is going to generate any revenue for you. So we would be looking at about an additional $500,000 in revenue. What we're expecting is that general fund taxpayer subsidy to go from $816,000 to $1.4 million. So the additional increase in net general fund subsidy to implement the priority projects every year, the operational impact is about $500,000 to $600,000. Questions?
All right. Yes, one question for you, Mike. In there, you mentioned park impact fees. What are those and where do they come from?
That is dollars and cents generated by development. And so the town has a pay-as-you-go, and impact fees are typically fees levied by towns and cities on the development community to support the capital improvements that are necessary to support the growth that you're bringing into the community. I'm not completely well-versed on the town of Oro Valley's impact fees. However, impact fees are not just necessarily for parks and recreation. They typically have them for utilities and roads and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I've never heard them called, in Oro Valley, just impact fees. I knew what that was, but I didn't know if there was something specific for parks. Okay, so it sounds like it's just part of what our builder impact fees are. Exactly. Great.
That cost is typically passed on to, the new homeowner.
Right, yeah, for roads and infrastructure, that kind of stuff. Parks, exactly. Too. Great. Looks like Member Temple has a question. Need to unmute yourself there, Gary. There we
go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Mike, I want to go back to a dialogue you and I had last month over grants.
Yes, sir.
When you talk about those, I'm making an assumption that the venues could be in the order of three different sources, one being local, one being state, one being national. Is that a fair statement?
In terms of grants?
Yes, sir.
Yes and no. I think that's a, if you wanted to kind of break it up that way, that is a good way to look at it. I would say that there are grants that are hyper-local. In other words, just your community. There are grants that are regional in nature. And sometimes they, when we think about grants, we only think about governmental agencies being the funder of those grants. But there are a whole bunch of other grants that, that may be applicable within your region, kind of in the Tucson metro area. And then you do have grants at a state level and then grants that are national. So I would almost say probably that, you know, maybe three or four geographical locations, but you're kind of spot on there, Gary.
Okay. Based upon your experience and looking at what we presented to you as a challenge, is there a particular grant source that's more favorable to what our future requirements are?
I would say that we have not dove into grant specificity at this juncture, but Christy did mention that you know, you do have really strong grant support on department staff through Nancy Ellis, and she has been very successful in writing and securing grant funding for a variety of projects, and is very in tune to what's available. The next step would be, obviously, now that we've identified these projects, is to do a lot more what we would call grant data mining to see which ones are eligible for the town to receive directly without necessarily a Parks and Recreation Foundation. And there's a lot to grants. In many cases, if there's no what we call matching dollars required, they're typically really small grants. And you have to weigh the cost benefit of applying for a really small grant that may only get you 5% of the project. You want to ensure that when you're writing grants that you have the majority of your funding lined up so that you're not completely relying on a grant to fully fund or majorly fund your project, unless it is one of those grants that comes around every blue moon that doesn't require any matching dollars.
Gotcha. All right. That helps explain it a lot. I appreciate it, Mike.
Sure.
Great. Do we have any other questions from members? Antonia, go ahead.
Hi. I just had a quick question in regards to your last slide there about the future operational impacts. Is that made off of our current, earlier in the presentation, you did a great job about explaining our target measures that we need to get to versus where we are. Were these made off of projecting our targets, or were these made off of our current costs?
These are, I would have to say, like the Aquatic Center, we don't really anticipate any additional costs for the improvements there, because we're not really looking at expanding major services there. It's really about life cycle replacement. But your community center building certainly is going to increase in terms of its operations and maintenance, simply because you're gonna completely revamp that facility. But we're also looking at it potentially generating additional dollars. Naranja Park, for example, its current operational impact is only about $165,000. So when we look at it, you're going to add a lot of maintenance costs to that park that really is not about generating revenue. There's not a lot of, I mean, the athletic fields are primarily where you're going to generate a lot of revenue, but you're going to increase your costs significantly because you're just adding a lot of what we would call park amenities that are going to be used informally by your community. So the maintenance, obviously, the trail costs are the trail costs. There's no offset. Steam Pump Ranch, we're not really necessarily looking at what we would call an overly significant increase. But again, a lot of that is going to be around maintenance. We're also not looking at a lot of opportunity to generate a ton of revenue there. So the Amphi School District is brand new. We've just kind of included about $125,000 to help with the maintenance costs of those athletic fields out there.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Board Member Ron, you had your hand raised.
Yeah, thanks, Chair Clark. Speaking of the Amphi School District partnerships, looking at Opportunity 2, and then looking at the future operational impacts, can it be assumed that there would be, in fact, some revenue generated after potentially 2023, if in fact the town of Oro Valley could set up an IGA or a partnership with Amphi School District, if Pima County would step back from, and what I'm thinking from a revenue standpoint is if in fact the town of Oro Valley took over the maintenance operation, had rights to the fields in the evenings and on the weekends, then therefore we would generate revenue with ball field reservations. Does that make sense?
I would say all of that is possible, yes. I think what we've done is kind of painted a worst case scenario for you with regards to this. Simply that you're trying to look at opportunities to add athletic fields to the system to better, well, maybe not necessarily add athletic fields, but what I would call improve the condition of your athletic fields. And $125,000 year over year is cheap compared to buying, developing, and managing and maintaining your own field. So I would say, your points are all well taken, and they certainly would be great points of negotiation as you look to enter into an IGA for the improvement as well as then the operations and maintenance of those.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Member Wood, go ahead.
Oh, hi, thanks. Just wanted to let you know that the Preserve Vistoso does have a 501c3, and they've got $1.5 million in pledges for the purchase of that property, the former golf course. So one of those has already started, and you can certainly build off of that. The other thing, on your slides 23 and 26, your cells weren't wide enough, and you missed the recovery column isn't wide enough, and it gives that funny DIV hashtag thing. So if this is the same...
that is just the formula, and I can scroll to that.
But I assume this is what you're going to use for the town council, so you might want to clean that one up before we go to the next step.
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. Vice Chair Coyle?
Quickly, Mike, you just passed a charter, Brandon, you did, where you had about the four things in terms of getting donations. One of the things you said was that we have a database developed, as well as there were three additional items that you recommended, which totally agree with. Maybe to Christy's question, for that database, is that maintained by Parks and Recs or by, mayor and council or Mary Jacobs or somebody? Oh.
Vice Chair Coyle, we keep that. It's a list of all of the partner organizations that we coordinate with, and I think sort of next steps in terms of developing a formal partnership policy. The word partnership is used kind of loosely, mm-hmm. and so moving forward, we definitely need to tighten that up a bit more, and so. As we proceed through the final adoption and have next implementation steps, that'll be a component that we'll address.
Great. Hey, Christy, to that end, like, does that include, like, say, when we have some of those entertainment events where somebody puts up a sign that says, you know, so-and-so, you know, purchase at this, would that kind of an organization be included in that database, or just be right now just ones that have kind of more of a formal relationship with y'all?
So in our database, that would sit in there now, but in terms of defining the formality of it, understanding what the difference between a partnership would be versus maybe a sponsorship,
right,
or you have a relationship where someone's paying rent to use your space. So we need to take a deep dive into what that looks like, but let me give you an example. We have a formal partnership with the Oro Valley Historical Society, uh-huh, for example. And however, we do not have measurable outcomes. So there's, again, this needs to get a little more tightened up and better defined. And so, more work ahead for all of us.
All right. Well, it's good we have it though. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions from the board members? All right. Well, Christy and or Mike, go ahead and proceed.
And so we're really just down the home stretch. As Christy said, we are still kind of working through the dates to fill into these blanks. And we may do a virtual community meeting in advance of the next town council meeting. It just all kind of depends on how all of this is going to play out. But for the most part, the next time we'll be in front of you is to kind of take all of the information we've shared with you and summarize it very briefly and have a what we would kind of call a final draft of the Parks and Recreation Master Plan in front of you for hopeful recommendation of adoption to town council. So again, Christy, I will not belabor the point. But that is, we're still kind of working through some of these exact dates. And that's really it. I think we've done a pretty good job of answering the questions along the way. So I will stop sharing my screen and see if there's anything else that you may have.
Do you have any other questions?
Chair Clark?
Yes, Bill.
Hi. Just a general question, and it might be for Christy, but with respect to our recommendation, which we're going to look at next meeting, and our recommendation to council, how do you see the component of our recommendation that would deal with the financial aspect of this? Or do you just see us as accepting the overall master plan, recognizing that there are different options, or is there anything that we would be looking at in terms of the financial specifically, Christy?
Member Saleta, your option number two is what I would be looking at. So it would be a recommendation for adoption of the plan. Not necessarily diving into the weeds of the financials and identifying which component comes first or second. Okay. It's the plan. It's a 10-year plan. Honestly, I think where we're going to be challenged is we're very, very excited about this. We've talked to the community for over a year. There's a lot of people very excited, but it's a 10-year plan, right? And so really prioritizing and how we're going to do the implementation. It's definitely going to be a balance based on expectations and a financial balance. So that's something that we'll work through as part of our budget process year over year. But at the end of the day, we know what it looks like for us for the next 10 years. Our community has told us that. So that in and of itself is fantastic. It's something that this department really hasn't had available to them, and as your director, it's something that we should all be very proud of. In this heavy lift for this past year, with COVID.
Sure. Yeah, just sort of a follow-up. Are you going to prepare a draft recommendation for our review that deals primarily with the components of the master plan? And again, as you stated, it won't include a whole lot of the financial, but it will include the major components of the plan. Is that correct?
Member Saletti, yes, that is correct. So in the body of the staff report that will be in your agenda packet, it will lay all of that out, really. Okay. Just the highlights within each component. We've gone over everything. You have heard every component that's going to be in the plan. But you're right. You know, the dollars and cents in the projects are really the meat of it. All of the heavy lifting was how we got here. And so, but we will, it will be kind of high level executive summary level.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Member Saletto. Looks like Vice Chair Coyle has a question.
A Christy question. I'm in the Community Academy right now.
Oh.
And when Mary Jacobs made her pitch last week, and this is open forum, so nothing proprietary, but she was echoing what you just said is, you know, when it comes down to the meat and potatoes, it'll be the numbers and the dollars. And she expressed the giant hill that was going to have to be, gotten over, and she wasn't even looking at the 60 or the 40. She was talking about the 10. At what point would it be beneficial for you to use PRAB to say, you know, you almost don't want to get ahead of the horse ahead of the cart in a sense, but when would it be beneficial to you that says, hey, this has been, the priorities have been sensed through PRAB, and here's kind of their representation of community support. It's almost like you don't want to say that, well, if we only had 3 million, here's what we'd do. But would there be something that would say, hey, there's a strong consensus that if we could get the 10, that would be the giant first step. I almost don't want to push mayor and council at all on that, but I'm wondering when it would help you, because that's going to be a big part of you talking about the meat and potatoes.
Right. And so, Member Coyle, as part of the adoption, in terms of adopting the plan itself, there can be, there can be additional statements and, you know, hypothetically, strongly support aligning financials with the priority list. In something in that regard. But we all know we all have worked or continue to work in professional lives and have to also balance our household. So we know that there are limitations. However, understanding the direction and the priority direction, I think, is going to be important. And that'll be important discussion for you as a board next month.
Thanks.
All right. Do we have any other questions or comments? Chair Temple, were you good there?
I don't have anything.
Okay, sorry, you unmuted, so I just wanted to double check. All right, well, I think that about wraps things up. So seeing no further business, may I have a motion to adjourn tonight at, let me see what time it is, 7:30 p.m. May I have a second, please?
Second.
All right. Thank you. Both Member Temple and Saletto. Mike, Mr. Svets, were you just waving goodbye?
Nope. I just wanted to say thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for those tuning in. We'll see you at our next study session, which is going to be on March 9th, 1 month from today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good job, Anna.
Thank you very much. Anna.